Welcome to Immigration Nerds. This podcast is for everyone seeking the details, context, and facts behind the banner headlines on immigration. It's the podcast that gives you the latest on immigration policy and politics and the real-world impacts on the people and businesses that make our world turn. If you believe immigration makes us all better, then this is the podcast for you. Brought to you by the nerds at Erickson Immigration Group, guiding clients and their employees through the complex immigration system for over 20 years.
Hello, immigration nerds. I'm Lauren Clark, senior attorney at Erickson Immigration Group. I am a fellow nerd, an immigrant, and host of this amazing podcast. On every episode, we're joined by the smartest nerds in the know as we cover trends in business, culture, technology, and politics at the intersection of global immigration. Today, we are considering a topic that is familiar to every immigration nerd: transnational communities and the way we maintain family, social, cultural, and economic links across national borders. Our guest today, two amazing women who originally hail from Somaliland, an unrecognized but self-governing and prospering country in the Horn of Africa. For Yasma Mera and Asha Farah, the stark contrast between life with and without education is what fuels their determination to provide opportunities to children in their native land. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll speak about how transnational communities play a vital role in leveraging migration's benefits for this generation and the ones to follow. But first, a roundup of the other immigration news that all of us nerds need to be aware of. And joining us for that, the news nerd-in-chief, Erickson Immigration Group partner, Rob Taylor. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Lauren.
Rob, what tops the news roundup today?
Yeah, so first of all, just on the business side of things, our regular reminder, H-1B cap is coming to an end soon, so all petitions must be filed by June the 30th. So if you have not already done so, you want to get on that, your time is running short. On the humanitarian side, which I think also really closely aligns with today's conversation, on June the 4th, President Biden announced that there would be a halt in the issuance of asylum applicants at the border. Specifically, individuals who are detained in the U.S. would now be subject to deportation instead of being able to apply for asylum. So this has really been an interesting development that has taken place really over the last year or so, where the administration has taken a lot of steps to kind of address what some call like the crisis at the border, others call just the migration at the border. But really what we're seeing is a lot of folks coming in through the southern borders through Mexico. And under the previous administration, there was some pretty harsh action taken to essentially limit anyone from coming across the border. But under I think part of President Biden's commitment was to ensure that the border remained open and that individuals who are eligible could seek asylum here in the U.S. I think as a result of that, we saw, I think it was in like December of this past year, upwards of like 10,000 individuals crossing the border a day. And I think the administration realized maintaining those levels was not practical. These individuals were coming in, they were applying for asylum, being given admission into the U.S. But then what we've seen is just a huge backlog of these asylum seekers, where their cases are taking many years to be adjudicated. And so I think the administration has taken some good steps to try to make this a more manageable system. They put in place the CBP-1 online application process. We've talked about that in the past. I think the challenges have been it can only accept so many applicants per day. Additionally, there have been like some technology issues. But at the end of the day, that was a step that they took to try to make the process more seamless. There's also some proposed rules, again, that we just talked about recently, ways that asylum officers can kind of expedite certain individuals at the border and not necessarily have to put them through the longer asylum process. That's still in the works and hasn't been implemented yet, but should also help with kind of this backlog at the border. But what was announced last week, I think some people viewed as kind of a Trump-era ruling, and that they essentially just said, we're not going to allow asylum seekers as long as we have a high level of applicants at the border. And I think the number that they came up with was 2,500. As long as there's more than 2,500 per day, they essentially won't allow for this. And if numbers get down closer to 1,500, then they can start accepting asylum applications at that point. This comes with a lot of issues and challenges. I mean, part of the deportation process is that you have to be able to return the person to a country. And a lot of countries won't accept people from the United States. And so that in and of itself kind of prohibits us from being able to deport them. The other part of it, obviously, is, you know, there's cost involved with deporting people and removing them either to their home country or a country that will accept them. So there's challenges there as well. And then I think more broadly, the question that's kind of come up is this being done because there's really an issue at the border, or is this kind of like political posturing as we kind of head into the election season? It has become pretty well established that the southern border is a huge point of emphasis and concern for American voters, and how this, you know, this action by the administration will play into that. Will that be positively seen? Is it just done to garner support and votes? I think everyone's hope is at the end of the day that the administration will continue to work in a direction that is fair and that does support people and realizes people at the border do have needs and that they're not just being kind of seen as a political tool. So we'll have to see. I mean, most recently, there's some discussion as to whether this new update will be challenged in the courts. When President Trump did something similar, there were court challenges. We expect the ACLU may challenge this as well. But for the time being, there's definitely an attempt to deport and not accept individuals who might be applying for asylum. As a result of that, they have said that the numbers of border crossings has decreased some. So we'll see if that continues to be a trend that continues or if kind of a one-off thing. So I think there'll be more to come as we get further along with this new ruling.
And definitely something that we'll continue to watch here at Immigration Nerds. As many of our listeners may be aware, it is Pride Month, but it is also the National Immigrant Heritage Month. And something that we definitely celebrate here at the Immigration Nerds is to honor and recognize the countless contributions made by immigrants to the fabric of American society. Just some facts for our listeners, because we know we love a nerd fact. Today, 1/3 of our doctors and nearly 3/4 of our farm workers are immigrants. And so many more are essential workers, first responders, and military service members. Immigrants own approximately 1 in 5 businesses, create millions of jobs, pay hundreds of billions in taxes, and spend even more on American goods. So immigrants have played a vital role in shaping America's history, culture, and economy. So National Immigrant Heritage Month is a powerful reminder of the diverse heritage and rich tapestry of cultures that make up our great nation, and something that we will continue to celebrate even beyond this month with the Immigration Nerds podcast.
Great. I think that's well said, Lauren. I think that for individuals who practice immigration, we're involved in it every day, and we see all aspects of it, right? Like we see the humanitarian pieces, we see the family pieces, we see, you know, the business pieces. But at the end of the day, there's people behind all of these processes and applications and petitions who have so much to offer. And they don't have to be doctors to make our country a better place. And so I think that that's just a great reminder of how much they contribute to our country and just how we need to continue to highlight the fact that it's easy to like just attach numbers and ideas and opinions to things that we see as it relates to immigration. But remember at the end of the day that these are people too, and people who have so much to offer and really make our country a better place.
Well, Rob, thank you for our news update.
Thank you.
Now for a conversation with two expats from Somaliland who have realized the dreams of immigration and education and are now focused on extending those blessings to the next generation of Somali youth. Yasmin Mera is a senior attorney in the international practice with Erickson Immigration Group and joins us from Virginia. And Asha Farah is a corporate real estate senior manager at Starbucks who's joining us live from Somaliland. Ladies, welcome to the Immigration Nerds podcast.
Thank you, Lauren. It's great to be here.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's so wonderful to have you both joining us. And I guess starting with you, Yasmin, can you tell us about how you connected with Asha and the school she co-founded in Somaliland, the Burr Academy of Science and Technology?
Yeah, absolutely. So about a year ago, I took a week off from work to visit Somaliland, and it was my second time to visit the country. I didn't initially plan to travel outside of the capital city of Hargeisa, but my father wanted to share his hometown with me as I spent most of my childhood between the Middle East and the US. So we drove to my father's hometown of Burral, And for listeners that are not familiar with Somaliland, Budal is approximately a 6 hours drive from Hargeisa. So we got to Budal, we visited some family, and the following day, my father had an appointment to go to Budal Academy. And I tagged along. I was immediately impressed the minute we arrived at the campus. We toured the school, we met some of the students, the teachers, and the staff, and I was truly amazed with what I saw. For our listeners here today, Budal Academy is a U.S.-accredited school established in 2016 by a small group of Somali-American professionals, including our co-founder, Shafara. And the school focuses on STEM education, covering science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The school is remarkable, with students coming from all over the country to study and teachers coming from various parts of the world to teach. Students' life on campus is very vibrant, with many activities and even a campus farm. The farm is my favorite part. This farm is a fascinating aspect of this school. Students learn about sustainable farming practices, and they even grow some of the food served in the school's cafeteria. Many of the students actually aim for full scholarships to universities globally, and we've seen some tremendous achievements.
The school truly sounds remarkable, regardless of the fact that this is a school that has been established in Somaliland. Asha, understanding kind of what this school is providing, can you explain to our listeners how your work to provide Somali youth with a rigorous STEM curriculum has changed their lives and yours?
Thank you, Lauren. I'm really so glad to be here with you today and joining you from Somaliland. And I want to thank Yasmin, who is one of our volunteers and just committed to Budal Academy with passion. And every day she shows up and supports this amazing project. So I want to thank her for connecting us. A bit of additional context about Somaliland education. Budal Academy is operating in one of the least developed countries in the world, with per capita income of less than $1,000. So the country used to be a part of Somalia. It's now Somaliland, or as Somalia calls it, Northern Somalia. And the country was for years ravaged by civil war, ongoing droughts, and famine. And the education system collapsed for generations of Somalilanders and Somalis, creating a severe lack of quality education. So for example, one data point you might find interesting is that 65% of the girls never make it to secondary school. Boys fare much better in general, but that gives you an idea about the educational landscape. And by the way, that goes for every sector of the society, that overall devastation stemming from the civil war. So we built this school. And really, our goal was to bring sustainable quality education, and that can create a center of academic excellence. And that is no matter how long it takes us. That's our vision and goal. We bring the educators from abroad. So over 90% of the teachers at Budal Academy come from outside of Somaliland. And the good thing about that is they come from diverse background, from Indonesia, America, and every part of the continent of Africa. So for students, we really wanted to give them hope, given that generation of Somalis have lost hope and really did not know what quality education is about. So we wanted to give them hope, and we wanted to make sure that they understand that while sitting in a classroom and for academy, they can receive the best and the highest possible education, compete with their peers no matter where they are. So as Yasmin alluded to it, it's a STEM, the curriculum is a STEM program. Students at ninth grade start learning about IT programs such as Cisco, preparing them for the job market. The second pillar about our vision is environmental stewardship. Given that this is an area that's prone to food insecurity, we design, like Yasmin said, we design a farm into the school plan. The idea is to expose students to what it's like to have food, Grow Food on campus. It's a co-ed boarding school, so it's a middle school and high school. So they take trips to the farm and they pick, daily produces. So that's a very important part of the program. Mentorship and leadership program is another major part of what we teach here. What that really means is to restore sense of civic duty, sense of do it for yourself. So our students, whatever they learn in the classroom, the goal is that they would take it to outside of the class. There are a lot of internally displaced villages around us, supported by the World Food Program. And these villages don't have any schools. So the goal for our students is to go there and teach these kids from these communities the basic math and English, and really to give back in the same way that we are giving the education to them. When we opened this school, we started with 50 students. We started with one building. It's now an oasis. It's located in a very dry and arid part of the world. But when you, like Yasmin said, when you enter it, you feel like you are in paradise. So environmental stewardship, leadership, STEM, we really focus on developing the whole person or the student, with the hope that one of these days these students would go to college and come back and be the engineer and the doctor and the teacher that will really take the country out of the current circumstance. So it's a beacon of hope. It's a role model. It's a SAT testing center. It's the only second one in the entire country. So students can take the SAT while they are here at the Brown Academy and apply to any college in the U.S. The second part of your question, I think, was how it has changed me. If I can tackle that question, originally from Somaliland, I grew up as a nomad. I was sent to school when I was 12 years old. And through extraordinary circumstance, really, I was able to come to the U.S. and get educated and move to Seattle, Washington from Washington, D.C. I started working for Starbucks Coffee Company and been working for Starbucks Coffee Company for the past 25 years. And so it's just a remarkable journey for me, given that I grew up as a nomad, didn't have access to education until I was 12. For me to pass on the gift of education to a little girl that came from a remote village in Somaliland, to a girl who comes from orphanage, and witness that child right now attending high school in the U.S., it's been beyond rewarding and fulfilling. So I feel like this is something that I always wanted to do, but it's just, I can't describe the feeling of waking up every morning and really getting an email and finding out one of our students was accepted to a prestige program somewhere around the world. So it's been incredibly fulfilling and rewarding for me.
My initial reaction, obviously, to hearing Yasmin and now you, Asher, is just wow. And a moment just to say wow on everything that you and Yasmin have put into the program, but also the program itself. I have to say it again, just wow. Understanding kind of you are creating this generational upon generational system to help improve, the lives of Somali youth, the country that they're in, but also a school that seems set up to help facilitate their ability to immigrate to other countries, for example, the US, to obtain further education or have more success. Seems like a great driving force or a driving result of the school. Yasmin had kind of indicated, and also you did, Asha, that there has been many success stories that have come out of the school. Would you mind by telling maybe one or two stories that have really garnered a lot of attention for the school because they were a success, maybe within that STEM field that the school has so acutely identified?
Yes, I can absolutely share that. So Deka is a young lady. She's about 17 years old. She came from an orphanage, not far from the school. And she and her brother were brought to that orphanage when they were 4 years old. So they came from one of these really economically depressed neighborhoods in the city where the school's located. And Nurtureback, this amazing woman who runs the orphanage. So when we opened this school in 2016, we visited this orphanage that would be near the school. And so we saw the remarkable work that this woman is doing for the kids. And we told her that if that student one day passes the entrance exam, she will have a full scholarship and her education will be fully paid for. And sure enough, 3 or 4 years later, she was able to pass the entrance exam, mainly because of the program, the mentorship program we put in place. And so she passed the entrance exam and excelled on every subject that is taught at this school. Last year, she went through incredibly rigorous application progress and interview by a program called PACS, which is a program for academic exchange, and it's U.S.-based. She just graduated from high school in Indiana. And when she graduated this year, the host family said, you know, if she can go back to Somaliland and get her visa again, we will take care of her education for good. In fact, that she's already has been accepted to school in Indiana. And so she is graduating on the 13th of June. She will be back in Somaliland as part of the requirement for the students to come back and apply. And she is on her way back to America to attend college. So for me, this is what this program and this project is about. That's one of many, many success stories. It has become this place that every mother that is in a remote village in Somaliland wants to walk for days to bring her child to the school. So DECA's story is not unique. There are so many others that DECA has become a role model. So really, really proud of her. But this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what is to come from Brough Academy.
Yasmin, turning back to you, being inspired by stories like this and your travel to the academy, I understand that you started volunteering remotely, helping with college counseling and guiding the students through the college application process. Can you tell us what that experience has been like?
Yeah, if I had to really put it into one word, I would just say it's been rewarding. And it's really given me a chance to connect with bright, motivated students who, despite their very challenging circumstances, they display determination and ambition every day. I've had the privilege of working with students who are not only striving to excel academically, but they're also very deeply committed to improving their own lives, their families' lives, their larger communities' lives. It's been gratifying to see them progress, gain confidence, and secure opportunities to further their education. So yes, this experience has reinforced my belief in the power of education to change lives and the importance of providing support and resources to those who really need it the most.
And the school clearly has brought in incredible people like yourselves. But Asha, I also understand you've been able to leverage your professional platform to bring cutting-edge technologies and a wide range of opportunities to the youth in Somaliland. Can you tell us about the impact of those particular efforts?
So given that we are a nonprofit organization, I'm really beyond blessed to be working with a group of amazing people called Friends of Brough Academy. I work, as I mentioned earlier, I work at Starbucks. So from sponsoring a child or student at Brough Academy to folks who work and the partners who work or co-workers that work in Starbucks IT department, setting aside close to 1,000 refurbished laptops for Brough Academy every single year. Starbucks is really big on giving back to the community. And specifically, our IT department is all about refurbishing these laptops every 3 years and making sure that they go to good use. So we've been, Brough Academy, have been a partner with Starbucks IT department. So every laptop that our students use come from a Starbucks headquarters in Seattle. And with Starbucks having back in the school, we have Microsoft that also donated the software licensing. Cisco got on board, but that's just the technology side of it. So we have a TV screen, a conference pre-published conference screen that are being shipped to Borough Academy. So every student has access to a laptop donated by Starbucks and is able to access online education by using TVs that came from Starbucks IT department. So that's just the technology side of it. We have high schools in the Seattle area, Mercer Island High School, and has a class called International Entrepreneurship. They chose Borough Academy as one of their global partners. So every year, students fundraise for Borough Academy. And not only last year, but this year, they funded the students that are coming through the student exchange program and coming to the U.S. And it doesn't end there. You know, got the school supplies, the furniture. This is a global grassroots. And these are like-minded individuals, no matter where they are, they really get it and understand the impact that a project like this can have on a student, on a family, on a community, on a country future. So I'm so honored and blessed to be working with folks that just understand the importance of education and where are the success stories of Borough Academy. So that is how I leverage the platform and the position that I'm in to support and create opportunities for the students in the school.
I think it's also a beautiful testament to the hope that the school really is bringing not only to Somaliland and the youth of that community, but also to everywhere else around the world that these students are traveling to and pursuing further education. For all our immigration nerds listening who may are members of their own transnational community, can you also tell us what role does the SLPA, or Somaliland Professionals Association of America, play in bringing people to collaborate and exchange ideas?
Yeah, so the Somaliland Professionals Association of America, it's a very impressive organization that was also founded by a group of Somali American professionals here living in the U.S. The organization plays a huge role in fostering collaboration and idea exchange among members of the transnational community. For all those immigration enthusiasts out there, the SLPA organization really truly works as a vital network connecting professionals from diverse backgrounds who all share a common heritage and interest in their country, Somaliland. It really truly serves as a platform for sharing knowledge, resources, and expertise. They have various initiatives and events. So the SLPA encourages collaborations, enabling members to contribute to Somaliland's development and address its unique challenges that we face. The association's efforts in organizing conferences and mentorship programs, they help bridge the gap between Somaliland and the diaspora community.
And from that, what advice do you have for those who seek to preserve their distinct cultural heritage while also connecting youth with global opportunity through immigration?
You know, the immigrant communities, no matter where they are in the world, face challenges in your country, in your community, whether it's a language barrier or economic hurdles. So I think it's really important for the folks hailing from these communities, whether it's the first generation that achieved the American dream or whether it's the second generation, is to spend time in these communities and also travel. And Yasmin is just the perfect example. They need role models. They need advocates. They need people who can share success and share knowledge. And I think the reward it lies by just showing up and getting exposed to what's happening and the beauty in these communities. So I think it's really, really important just to place ourselves in these communities and hear from them. Only when we hear from them and their culture and their language are we able to preserve these distinct cultures while opening up opportunities for them also.
I think on that line, Asha, a concept that I've kind of come across recently, either in doing the podcast or just within my profession, is this idea of the birth lottery. So some of us kind of win the birth lottery based on where we're born, even if we are, you know, a first, second or third generation immigrant. And so looking back at the countries that we hail from, whether there is this not necessarily responsibility, but this desire to assist because maybe they didn't win the birth lottery. Maybe they don't have an academy that is able to provide them with the hope and the opportunities that you guys currently are, obviously in Somaliland. Yasmin, I guess maybe this is a question for you. Do you feel like having this birth lottery kind of concept is also providing a drive on your end to give back and to be involved as much as obviously the stories that are inspiring you and the school that has inspired you?
Oh, absolutely. My family came to this country to really give my siblings and I better opportunities. So I do feel like that I'm in debt to giving back to the country that raised them. And so for me, and in doing that, obviously, I not only build that relationship that I so craved for that I did not have the, you know, ability to experience growing up. So in doing that, I have, you know, I'm building that relationship, I'm giving back. And I'm also seeing the country that has raised them, has given them better opportunities, has inspired them, you know, to do much more. So if I need to carve out 1 or 2 hours during my weekend to just review an essay for someone or to do an interview prep for them, I'm so more than willing to do that because what is 1 or 2 hours of my time for someone that, you know, would potentially could receive a lifetime opportunity that could really change their lives.
Especially when the impact is so incredible, which I think the Academy clearly demonstrates. One of the things that I love so much about this podcast is we also like to celebrate education and primarily educating on immigration stories or telling the immigration story. With that being aligned, I think with the Academy and understanding everything they've explained about the Academy is that there is so much hope, support, and drive for not only the youth of the current school to succeed, but obviously for generations beyond that. What do you hope next for the school, or what is the next strive advance for the school to take?
I want to appeal to the second generation of Somalis in North America, in Canada, and really, for that matter, anyone else who's interested in coming to Somaliland and teaching at Bar Academy. So one of the things that we consistently struggle with is quality teachers. And while our teachers come from all over the world, we really need the Yasmins of the world to come back and teach at Bar Academy and bring their knowledge and ingenuity and skill. So what's next for Bar Academy is really for me to create that robust pipeline for teachers and volunteers and create a pathway for them to come back and to teach and to connect with these students while they are in their country and also come here for the experience and have a new adventure. It's not that far. It's only 3 hours flight from Dubai to Somaliland. So really, that is our next big step is to create that pipeline for teachers and volunteers to come here and teach. In terms of really the bigger and broader strategic goal for the school is, bar none, we want to become a technology hub and the best school in East Africa. I want to make sure the student that's in Kenya knows about Bar Academy and convinces their parents that I want to go to Bar Academy. I want the student from the U.S. come here and be part of that exchange program. The student from Ethiopia, from the entire continent, we want to create a place of academic excellence and specifically focusing on technology and environmental stewardship and making sure that it becomes a role model for the entire Africa region. So we have some big goals, but we're taking small steps. And right now we are building the infrastructure to really make sure that the students that are graduating next year and graduated this year have the ability to go to college.
I think the main goal that I see is essentially putting Bora Academy on the map, you know, making people aware of this wonderful school that's out there, not only within the Somaliland community, but also beyond that. Even if you don't have the ability to go to the country, I think remotely, right? I think one of the good things that came out of COVID was essentially being so interconnected. And so just hopping on Zoom a couple of hours during the weekday or the weekend to essentially contribute. If you're in marketing, we can use a marketer. If you are in, you know, grant proposal writing, we can use somebody doing that, you know? So anything, any skill that you might think that you have, we can find a place for you in terms of volunteering. And it is, like I said, it's a rewarding experience. You really do truly get to see the outcomes of your work, your hard work. And it's just a great experience overall.
Right now, we are looking for tuition assistance. So if someone would like to sponsor a child, that is definitely a need that the school has right now. If we could create some sort of collective effort to sponsor the number of girls that we're trying to recruit every year, maybe 10, maybe 5, that will really help us.
Wonderful. Well, Asha Farah and Yasmin Mera, thank you both so much for sharing your passion for education, giving back, and building transnational community with all of us on the Immigration Nerds podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Lauren. I really appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully we'll join you in the future to update you about Vora Academy.
Thank you, Lauren. It's been a pleasure being here. Thank you for your time. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
And thank you to all you nerds out there listening. You can find links to learn more about the Borough Academy of Science and Technology located in Somaliland in our show notes. And you can track everything going on at Erickson Immigration Group at our website, eiglaw.com. And remember, if you believe immigration makes us all better, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe and share, and meet us right back here for another new episode of Immigration Nerds.